it's not just that I've done 17 years and 8 months. I've done my entire childhood here.
I know what it's like to be just left in a cage, to put it politely, to rot for years or at a time.
We have been raising minors, raising children in our prison system, adult prison system.
Welcome to a special edition of the Texas Crime Cast by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Tristan Hallman. But the real star of the show today is Jen Emily. Hello, Jen.
Hello.
As we know, Christmas time is a time for children. And earlier this year, Jen wrote a story about kids who are tried as adults in criminal courts and end up spending a long time in prison. And that's the subject of today's show. Jen will also speak with attorney George Ashford on that subject. Jen, for those people who haven't read the series yet, what's it all about?
It's about kids who commit crimes and then as adults are serving time in adult prison, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years later. And it's about what it's like to grow up in prison. What is it like to grow up behind bars? What do you learn behind bars and what are you not learning? You're not learning what we all learned as a teenager and in our early 20s about how to get your first job, how to find an apartment, how to pay rent, how do you go on a date, and how do you socialize. They are growing up in an environment where it's not okay to touch. They don't get hugs. They don't have friends. They have associates. And so they really don't learn all the things that we learned. If you think back to when you were 14, 15, 16, or, you know, 20, what were you learning? And those are the things they didn't go through.
So you ended up focusing on a couple of specific people for these stories. Could you tell us a little bit about those people and what you found about them?
Sure. One of the people that we focused on is Anisha Walker. She's in her early 30s now, and when she was 14, she was a runaway living on the streets, and she shot and killed a man during a robbery. And she was tried as an adult. She was the youngest person at the time tried as an adult in Tarrant County. And she went to prison, adult prison, when she was 14. Let's hear a little bit from Anisha now.
She got on the phone. She was like, I got an effing 14-year-old at my back gate. Like, she wouldn't let me on the unit. And she got a call back, and they said, yes, she's supposed to be here. Let her in.
And that was Anisha when she went to prison. They didn't think she was supposed to be there. And she rode the prison bus and went there just like any other inmate, but they were really confused. And as Anisha tells us, she was supposed to be there, and they let her on. And she talked about how when she was in, when she went to prison, she had, you know, roommates or cellmates who were a lot older, a lot bigger than she was. Her hands were so small. If she wanted to, she could slip out of her shackles. I mean, it's a really different way to grow up. And she's coming out one day. She's getting out of prison.
And Anisha was, remind me, she was the one who was in the photograph, and some people might remember this, sticking her tongue out at the photographer.
Yes. When Anisha was 14 and sentenced to 35 years in prison, she turned and looked at a photographer from the morning news and stuck out her tongue. And I really can't imagine anything more childish. And when you contrast that to with the seriousness of going to prison for murder, it really kind of shows you what her mindset was like.
Another person that you interviewed was Christopher Hood. Could you tell us a little bit about Christopher?
Yeah, Christopher, like Anisha, is in his early 30s now. He was locked up when he was 11. He sexually abused two relatives because he had seen a lot of, you know, inappropriate sexual behavior when he was a kid. He saw his father rape his mother. His father actually went to prison for that, and he didn't really know what he was supposed to do. He thought it was okay. Actually, we can hear a little bit from Christopher right now.
There was a lot of sexual activity going on when I was a little boy, and I saw that happening with my dad, and I guess picked up on it and thought it was okay myself. I really didn't know at that particular time.
So that's clearly one of those cases where someone has grown up and sort of become a little bit retrospective, which you don't necessarily hear from, you know, 20-year-olds who commit robbery or something like that. Maybe they think they were a stupid kid, but this really was a case where he was a stupid kid.
That's correct. I mean, he was 11, and, you know, he had not yet entered sixth grade. He was arrested the summer before fifth and sixth grade, And he, you know, in addition to seeing all these things in his home, he went to school in dirty clothes. He, you know, he really wasn't cared for. He didn't really ever have the mom or dad or grandma or aunt or even a neighbor who, you know, sort of helped him along like so many of us do. And it's almost like he was made into what he became. He was made into a sex offender.
What other kinds of people did you talk to for the series of stories, you and Diane Jennings?
We talked to some people who had been in for a really long time. They'd been in and out. They went in for their initial crime and were paroled and screwed up, either because of drugs or, you know, something fairly minor, or was a parole violation. And now they're pushing 60 and they're serving time for a crime they committed when they were 14, 15, 16. And they realize their mistakes, and they realize it's too late, that they'll probably are going to spend, if not the rest of their life in prison, a very long time. And they have a lot of regrets, and they wish they had listened and done the right thing when they got out the first time.
So because there's obviously these people are in prison for committing crimes, who, you know, is there actually a sense of among people of, well, these people committed, and some of these are heinous acts. They're very extreme acts that they commit when they're 13 and 14, and that's often why they're tried as adults. But is there any, you know, basically what I'm asking is, why should people care?
People should care because these kids are coming out one day. You have to be 14 to be tried as an adult, but you can go into the juvenile system at 11 and be held over for up to 40 years. If you go in at 11 and you come out at 51, you've still really got quite a bit of life to live. And when these kids, who are no longer kids, come out, they still have that mindset as a child. They have not, as I was talking about earlier, they haven't learned how to take care of themselves. They don't know how to get jobs. And they're coming back and they're going to either live in our neighborhoods, or they are going to be working at the grocery store we go to, or the car wash, or the restaurant, or the, you know, clothing store, and we're going to interact with them. And if they don't get the help they need, if they don't get the education they need, both emotionally and just the how do I do this kind of knowledge, they're going to commit more crimes, or they're going to end up on welfare. And you know, society pays either way, and it's cheaper, experts say, to pay for it on the front. There's a juvenile justice expert at the University of Texas at Dallas, who, his name is Alex Picaro, and he studies juvenile justice, and he likens it to, you know, you go to the dentist and you every 6 months and you kind of keep up with your teeth, because if you don't, you're going to pay more for, you know, having some kind of procedure, and they're drilling and they're doing a lot if you do take care of your car. And so let's pay up front, he says. It's preventative maintenance. That's the word I was trying to think of, or the phrase I was trying to think of. So we need to have preventative maintenance for these kids who are coming out into society to live with us. And if they're successful, society is better off.
What, you know, the thing is, preventative maintenance sounds great, but what does that actually mean in effect? What is the solution to this?
The solution is that not to just let these kids out into the world and they go about their lives. A lot of them they're not paroled. They serve their full sentences. It's called their flat time. And so they have no one to check in on them. And there are certain groups like Unlocking Doors, which is run by the former head of the board that oversees the Texas prison system. Her name is Christina Crane. And they check in with people. They help them find jobs. They help them get education. They help you find an apartment. And, you know, they keep checking in on you. And it's like, well, do you want to come in? Do you want to do this? And it really makes these people more likely to seek help and take advantage of the help, because, you know, Unlocking Doors doesn't give up on them. But there's not many organizations like that, and, you know, Unlocking Doors can only do so much. But there needs to be some kind of way for a group like Unlocking Doors to really focus in on these kids who are coming out, because they have needs that other prisoners who come out don't. If you go to prison at 30 or even 25, you've learned a lot before you've gotten there. But if you go in at 11 or 14, or even 16, you're missing out on a lot of life lessons.
You know, I think back to when I was that age, and I obviously understood what prison was and jail was, but do the people that you talk to actually sort of understand when they get to prison what it is, and does it match with their reality?
No, it really doesn't. This one woman I talked to, she stood trial as an adult for a murder at 16, and she was certified to stand trial as an adult. And she said, I thought it just meant I was smart enough to understand the court terms. And so she didn't really realize, I'm going to adult prison. I am going to have to live with adults. And it's once they get there, it's a whole new world. Joining me in the studio is George Ashford. He is a criminal defense attorney who does both representation of adults and juveniles, but you spend a lot of your time at the juvenile courthouse. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
There's been a lot of attention recently about the laws concerning juveniles and some push to change those laws. And can you talk a little bit about why the juvenile courts are separate from adult court? Why do we treat kids differently?
Well, primarily because they are kids. And that definition is right now children from 10 years old to 16 years old. When you're 17 years old, you are actually considered to be an adult for purposes of criminal law in the state of Texas. So you could go to the penitentiary with adults 20, 30, 40, 50 years old if you commit an offense at the age of 17, and that's without going through the certification process that we'll be talking about, I'm sure, in juvenile court.
What is it that makes kids different? Obviously, kids are kids and adults are adults, but what is it that the courts view as being so different about kids?
I don't think it's anything magical. I mean, I have had psychiatrists and psychologists tell me that the human brain is not fully developed until you're at least 21 years old. And I don't believe psychologists believe and psychiatrists believe it's actually even accurate to diagnose an individual with some type of mental condition until they've reached the age of 21. So that would be real technical, but I think it's just primarily, I mean, they are children. They are children just chronologically because of their age. We understand that they're children, and we hope that, you know, we can get them where they need to be in life before we give up on them.
And basically, because the kids' brains aren't developed, they have poor impulse control. They don't think through the consequences. They might understand right from wrong, but they don't see, if I do this, then this happens.
Absolutely. And actually, that's the problem with a lot of adult criminals. Poor impulse control, lack of maturity, lack of thought, but certainly as a child, I mean, that's what's going to occur. And I mean, if you have good parenting and you have good social surroundings, good teachers, whatever, you can affect that, you can improve that. But just by nature of the fact that an individual's a child, you're going to have those kinds of conditions.
And over the years, we've seen a change in how the courts and society want to treat kids. In the 1980s, there was a crackdown, this idea of the super predator kid, and we wanted harsher sentences. And then as a result of that, the age that kids can stand trial in Texas was lowered from 16 to 14. What brought about this change in not just Texas, but across the country? What happened?
Well, I can speak from experience in Dallas. We had two things that I can remember happening. Number one, we had gangs come to Dallas. I was well familiar with gangs in Los Angeles and gangs in New York and East Coast, West Coast, but we started getting Crips and Bloods in Dallas. We started getting kids forming their own gangs, and that was number one. Number two was we had an element of criminals in Dallas who began using juveniles to sell crack, cocaine, and commit crimes, probably knowing that, you know, the sentences that kids would face would be lesser, and of course it buffers them from actually being prosecuted. And so they were using children for criminal activity. And we had some kids committing very serious crimes, murders, capital murders, aggravated robberies, I think at a higher rate than had ever been done before.
And did this idea of wanting to crack down more, did it come out of fear and not really understanding where these kids were coming from? And also the ideas we talked about earlier about the child's brain, and that's a science that's really developed more recently and wasn't really thought of much in the 1980s.
No, I think it primarily was fear. We had kids go way over and above what we were used to. Back in the old days, the worst that could happen to a young person was they could be committed to the Texas Youth Commission, or TYC as it's called, and that's as close as we have to the kids' version of prison. It's not prison, it's school, it's counseling, it's even sometimes high school sports. It's everything that we could do to keep a situation normal, but it's where we would keep the worst kids. And the longest period of time they could be there would be until their 19th birthday. And that just wasn't enough for the level of crime that some of these kids were engaged in. And so that was the reason for the change.
And so today, if someone commits a crime when they're a kid and they end up in adult prison, how do they get there?
There's two ways. If they're at least 14 and they have committed certain serious felony offenses, they can be certified as an adult. The juvenile branch of the district attorney's office can certify or can ask the court to certify this individual as an adult. And basically they come in and say, look, we don't want this kid in the juvenile system. They're too sophisticated. Their crime is too advanced. They're too interlinked to these adults that are already in the system. And so we just want to go ahead and send them straight to the adult system now. And they would literally go over and have a trial in the Frank Crowley Courthouse where adults 20, 30, 40 years old are having trials and they're 15, 16, or maybe even 14 years old. The other way is that they can receive a determinate sentence. And a determinate sentence is kind of a hybrid. Before, again, if an individual went to Texas Youth Commission, they would go, and the longest period of time they could go is until they were 19 years old. Now, an individual could start a sentence out at the Juvenile Justice Department, and that's what used to be called TYC, but it's Juvenile Justice Department now. So an individual could go to the Juvenile Justice Department, say at 15, if they received a determinate sentence for, let's say, an aggravated robbery, and they might receive actually a 15-year sentence, okay? Determinate means there's actually a number of years. So they get a 15-year sentence. They might start out going to the Juvenile Justice Department. They might be there 2 to 3 years, and then if they were felt not rehabilitated, then they would go on to the Texas Department of Corrections, the adult prison, to serve out the remainder of their sentence.
What are your thoughts about the certification of kids? Should, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-olds be standing trial as adults?
I rarely think that that's appropriate. I think most laws are somewhat overreactions. And, I mean, that's tough to say. I mean, it wasn't an overreaction. We definitely had kids that were engaged in really, really serious offenses, and the punishment ranges probably weren't sufficient. But that's only a few kids. That's not every kid. Every kid's not the same in terms of how they're going to react to being incarcerated and being rehabilitated. And so, you know, we tend to go overboard. So I'm rarely in favor of any kid being certified at 14, certainly 14, 15 or 16 years old, when we can at least give them an opportunity through the determinate sentence program to go to the Juvenile Justice Department, be with other kids, receive intensive services, and then at least they have an opportunity to perhaps parole out of the Juvenile Justice Department, go back into society, be on probation in the community. And if not, if you know, the system doesn't feel they're worthy, then they're transferred to adult system, but they're in the adult system with other individuals that are their age. They're not, you know, there with adults when they're still kids themselves.
And kids who go through the juvenile system can be sentenced up to 40 years, right?
Yes. If they are charged with a first-degree felony, murder, aggravated robbery, aggravated sexual assault, capital murder, which is actually more than a first-degree felony, they can receive determinate sentences of up to 40 years. Kids charged with second-degree felonies could receive a maximum of 20 years, which is actually what a second-degree felony carries for an adult, a maximum of 20 years in prison.
And most of these kids, if they go to the adult system, they go in so young. They're coming out one day, and they're coming back to society. How is that for them, or how can you imagine that is for them? It seems like they miss out on a lot of life lessons and a lot of educational lessons.
They do. I mean, if you believe, you know, what goes on in prison is, you know, what we hear goes on in prison, you know, the most vulnerable people are victimized. And who is more vulnerable than a young child amongst adults? Who would be more vulnerable than a 17 or an 18-year-old among 30 or 40-year-olds that have been in prison for as long as the 17 or 18-year-old has been alive? I mean, that's just ridiculous. So there's always that chance that one person, like in the movies, has somebody that protects them and then they mentor them and they read a lot of books and they grow and they come out to be a great individual. But I tend to think it would probably be more the other way around than for that to happen.
That's only in the movies.
Correct.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, George.
Well, thank you for having me again.
That's all for us today. Thanks for joining us, and Merry Christmas if you celebrate it. Next week, we'll have a special year-end wrap-up show, and we'll talk about the biggest stories of 2015. Thank you for listening. Our show comes out every Thursday, and if you haven't subscribed on iTunes yet, we hope you do so. And we hope you read Kids Are Criminal stories and continuing coverage of criminal justice issues on DallasNews.com. We are on Twitter. We're at Texas Crimecast. We also hope you like our Facebook page. Our sound engineer and producer today is Tommy Noel. For Jennifer Emily, I'm Tristan Hallman. Stay safe out there.